morning. This is the KBOO Morning News for Thursday, June 29, 2006. I'm Brian Smith.
Chris Andre.
In Oregon, the Mike's Gulch timber sale has been awarded to the Silver Creek Logging Company. The Supreme Court is ending its term with ruling on the insanity defense and trials for Guantanamo detainees. Israel has jailed 65 Hamas members, including 8 cabinet members, in the West Bank, while continuing to terrorize residents of Gaza with low-flying jets. Portland area weather, partly sunny and humid, and the chance of thunderstorms in the Cascades and the Gorge this afternoon. Temperatures in the high 60s to low 70s. Tonight, mostly cloudy, temperatures in the 50s.
The House yesterday approved $2 million for salmon fishermen suffering from a sharply curtailed fishing season because the government is more tightly limiting their catch. $2 million may sound like a lot, but the daily cost of the Iraq war, the daily cost, is $177 million. That's $7.4 million an hour. The money is a fraction of the $81 million West Coast lawmakers want, but frustrated over the Bush administration's failure to declare a disaster to help the fishermen, lawmakers now hope the vote will keep the door open to add more money later. Democratic Representative Mike Thompson of coastal Northern California said the measure is necessary so we'll be able to revisit and address the very real disaster that's happening on the coast of California and the coast of Oregon, a disaster that's unfortunately been completely ignored by this administration. Thompson's measure passed on voice vote as an amendment to an annual spending bill funding the Departments of Justice, Commerce, and State. The amendment would move the $2 million from the Commerce Department's administrative funds into the general fund of the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration to help the fishermen.
The Oregon League of Conservation Voters has endorsed Governor Ted Kulongoski for re-election, according to the Oregonian. The league praised him for his actions that it described as adopting stronger tailpipe emission standards for new cars, endorsing smart technologies and alternatives to fossil fuels such as wave energy and wind power, and aggressively campaigning to stimulate Oregon's biofuel markets.
A timber sale in a national forest roadless area has been awarded to a logging contractor despite efforts by conservation groups and the governor to stop it. The Southeastern Oregon timber sale was awarded to Silver Creek Logging of Merlin, Oregon, after a federal judge in Medford decided it could go forward. At the same time, the judge will hear a lawsuit arguing the U.S. Forest Service should consider new scientific information. Meanwhile, a federal judge in San Francisco has yet to rule on a motion from Governor Kulongoski and conservation groups to stop the logging until two other lawsuits challenging the Bush administration's new roadless rule can be heard. The governor's office and conservation groups have complained that the Bush administration is pushing through the sale in Mike's Gulch when it had assured them it would keep protections in place until states had worked out with the Forest Service whether to log in roadless areas.
The Supreme Court ruled yesterday that foreign suspects whose governments were not notified of their assets cannot keep statements made to police from being considered during their trials. The ruling included one case from Oregon in which a Mexican man was sentenced to nearly 20 years in prison for wounding a Medford police officer. By a 6-3 vote, justices ruled against the men who contended that their rights under a 1969 treaty were violated when police failed to tell them that they could contact their consulates. Writing for the majority, Chief Justice John Roberts said suppressing statements and waiving deadlines for raising such issues on appeal are too severe to remedy violations of the treaty. The court did not deal directly with whether the treaty creates a requirement that U.S. authorities, police, or the courts must tell foreign suspects that they can contact representatives of their government. Instead, Roberts said the majority assumes that the treaty provides foreign suspects with such rights. But he said the remedies sought by two foreign suspects outweigh any harm done. The United States is one of 168 countries that signed the Vienna Convention on Consular Relations. It requires competent authorities to tell a consulate when one of its citizens has been arrested.
With a push from AARP Oregon, an initiative to expand a state prescription drug discount to all Oregonians appears to have drawn enough signatures to reach the November ballot. Organizers say they are well past the required 75,630 signatures and hope to reach 115,000 by this weekend for a cushion against signatures disqualified by the Secretary of State's office. Initiative 122, sponsored by Democratic Senator Bill Morissette, would expand Oregon's drug buying discount program, which offers savings of up to 60% on some prescription medicines. The program, launched in 2003 through bulk purchasing by the state, is now limited to people 55 and older with incomes less than 185% of the federal poverty level. If the initiative passes, the discount would be available to all Oregonians. The initiative is backed by a coalition of health, labor, and consumer groups. Unlikely to make the ballot is a broader health reform initiative, which would amend the state constitution to make affordable health care a right.
And the House has again turned down an amendment that would have blocked the Justice Department from prosecuting people who smoke marijuana for medical purposes in states with laws that permit it. A year ago, the Supreme Court ruled that the federal government can prosecute medical marijuana users even when state laws allow doctor-prescribed use of the drug. 11 states have such medical marijuana laws. California Republican Congressman Dana Rohrabacher, whose state has legalized medical marijuana use, says if the voters have seen it to it and the doctor agrees, it's a travesty for the government to intercede. Advocates say using marijuana is the only way that many chronically ill people, such as AIDS and cancer patients, can relieve their symptoms.
The Supreme Court is off to the beach for the summer with its bucket and shovel after ending its term with rulings on insanity defenses and trials for detainees at Guantanamo Bay, Cuba. The two cases are all that lie between justices and a three-month vacation from the court. Initially, the court had planned to adjourn for the summer on Monday, but the justices are not finished work on five cases. Yesterday, they ruled in a Texas redistricting case and cases involving the rights of inmates and foreign suspects. In the two remaining cases, the justices will decide whether President Bush overstepped his authority with military war crimes trials for foreigners held at the U.S. prison camp at Guantanamo Bay, Cuba, and whether to strike down Arizona's insanity defense law in an appeal brought on behalf of a schizophrenic teenager who killed a police officer.
The Senate Judiciary Committee Chairman Arlen Specter said yesterday that he is seriously considering filing legislation to give the Congress legal standing to sue President Bush over his use of signing statements to reserve the right to bypass laws. Specter, a Pennsylvanian Republican, made his comment after a Judiciary Committee hearing on signing statements, which are official documents that Bush has used to challenge the constitutionality of more than 750 laws when signing legislation. Bush has issued more signing statements than all previous presidents combined, but he has never vetoed a bill, depriving Congress of any chance to override his judgment. If Congress had the power to sue Bush, Specter said, the Supreme Court could determine whether the president's objections are valid under the Constitution. But a lawyer for the administration, Deputy Assistant Attorney General Michelle Boardman, testified that Bush has shown Congress respect by using signing statements instead of vetoes when he has concerns about parts of bills. Boardman said the president has the power and responsibility to bypass any statute that conflicts with the Constitution, even in cases where the Supreme Court has yet to rule on an issue, but the president has determined that a statutory law violates the Constitution.
The U.S. Senate has voted to confirm Henry Paulson, chairman of investment bank Goldman Sachs, as John Snow's successor as Treasury Secretary. Paulson's nomination was backed by both Republicans and Democrats after earlier powering its way through the Senate Finance Committee. He becomes the third Treasury Secretary under President Bush, following after Snow and Paul O'Neill. The 60-year-old earned $35 million in salary from Goldman Sachs last year. He will now have to give up not only his job at the bank, but all his shares. During his hearing before the Senate Finance Committee, Paulson stuck close to current Bush administration policies. He said that the U.S. should reduce its giant budget deficit, but ruled out raising taxes to help fix the problem. And he said he would continue efforts to get China to revalue the yuan. Paulson has been chairman and chief executive officer of Goldman Sachs since May of 1999, when the bank went public. It's not his first time working for the White House. He was a member of the Domestic Council as staff assistant to President Nixon in 1972. This from the BBC.
And at least 9 people have been killed and hundreds of thousands evacuated as northeastern United States suffered its worst flooding in years. Up to 200,000 people were evacuated from their homes in northeastern Pennsylvania alone because of rising waters on the Susquehanna River. A state of emergency has been declared across large parts of New Jersey, New York, and Pennsylvania. The flooding follows days of torrential rain along the East Coast, and New York Governor George Pataki said it was by far the worst flooding he has seen in his 12 years on the job. The National Weather Service reported 9 fatalities across the eastern United States. This is from the BBC.
A recent report finds that American cars and pickup trucks are responsible for nearly half of the greenhouse gases emitted by automobiles globally, even though the nation's vehicles make up just 30% of the nearly 700 million cars in use. Cars in the U.S. are driven more miles, face lower fuel economy standards, and use fuel with more carbon than many of those driven in other countries. The report's authors hope their findings will bolster efforts in Congress to require federal regulators to raise fuel economy standards for vehicles and set a mandatory cap on greenhouse gases from all sources. Numerous studies have linked carbon dioxide emissions from burning fossil fuels such as gasoline to global warming. The study concludes that vehicles manufactured by the nation's big three automakers, General Motors, Ford, and Daimler Chrysler, produce the most emissions, with Toyota ranked fourth. Nearly one-third of the emissions came from vehicles made by GM.
Chairman of the House Judiciary Committee James Sensenbrenner has broken House rules to adjourn a meeting after losing a vote to Democrats, according to Ross Story. The vote was on an item from the Republicans' American Values agenda, which the party says will codify the American character. Specifically, it aims to bar any court, including the United States Supreme Court, from hearing any legal challenge to the Pledge of Allegiance. Sensenbrenner hoped to reverse the vote when the committee reconvened later in the afternoon. Democrats on the committee, save ranking member John Conyers, refused to attend. With many Republicans also absent, there was no quorum present to hold a vote. Conyers attended, according to sources, only for the sake of raising a point of order, indicating that the previous adjournment had violated rules. Sensenbrenner responded by indicating that he had not heard the objection earlier. Whether or not they hold another vote remains to be seen. However, it is likely to happen, and several Republicans on the committee did not cast a vote in the first round.
Voters in Berkeley, California, will be able to weigh in on whether to impeach President Bush and Vice President Cheney this fall. The Berkeley City Council voted this week to put the advisory measure on the November ballot. The move is symbolic because only Congress has impeachment powers. Some critics have passed resolutions calling for impeachment, but supporters say Berkeley would be the first city asking voters to weigh in on the issue. It will cost the city $10,000 to put the issue on the ballot. One city councilwoman says the idea is to start a grass fire on the issue and spur other cities around the country to consider similar moves.
And the American Civil Liberties Union announced yesterday that it has filed Freedom of Information Acts requests, or FOIAs, with the primary American security agencies for information relating to the use of cutting-edge brain scanning technologies on suspected terrorists, according to Ross Story. Two private companies have announced that they will begin to offer lie detection services using functional magnetic resonance imaging, or fMRI, as early as this summer. fMRI can produce live, real-time images of people's brains as they answer questions, view images, listening to sounds, and respond to other stimuli. These companies are marketing their services to federal government agencies, including the Department of Defense, Department of Justice, the National Security Agency, and the CIA, and to the state and local police departments. Experts in the field have told the ACLU that the science to back up any reliable use of fMRI as a lie detector or mind reader simply does not exist. At most, correlations have been observed between certain brain patterns and particular highly controlled behaviors produced in laboratory experiments. Experts also note that these early experiments on a few American college students are a long way from real-world settings, involving individuals in widely varying situations and with widely varying cultures, intelligence levels, and states of mind.
The Supreme Court yesterday upheld most of the Texas congressional map engineered by former House Majority Leader Tom DeLay, but threw out parts saying some of the new boundaries failed to protect minority voting rights. The fractured decision was a small victory for Democratic and minority groups who accused Republicans of an unconstitutional power grab in drawing boundaries that booted four Democratic incumbents out of office. Republicans picked up six Texas congressional seats 2 years ago, and the court's ruling does not seriously threaten those gains. Lawmakers, however, will have to adjust boundary lines to address the court's concerns. At issue was the shifting of 100,000 Hispanics out of a district represented by a Republican incumbent and into a new, oddly shaped district. Foes of the plan had argued that that was an unconstitutional racial gerrymander under the Voting Rights Act, which protects minority voting rights. On a different issue, the court ruled that state legislators may draw new maps as often as they like, not just once a decade, as Texas Democrats claimed. That doesn't mean Democratic and Republican state lawmakers can push through new maps any time there's a power shift at a state capital. The Constitution says states must adjust their congressional district lines every 10 years to account for population shifts.
The Bush administration affirmed yesterday Israel's right to defend itself against acts of terror and called on the president of the Palestinian Authority and Egypt to help resolve a crisis provoked by the abduction of an Israeli soldier. The White House and State Department declined to take a position on Israel's pressure offensive in southern Gaza that has knocked out electricity and water supplies for most of the 1.3 million Palestinians who live in Gaza. The spokesman again condemned the abduction of an Israeli corporal and said Secretary of State Condoleezza Rice and U.S. diplomats continue to do everything they can to bring this crisis to a peaceful resolution. At the same time, the spokesman stressed that Israel has a right to defend itself in the lives of its citizen. He also urged the Israeli government to ensure that innocent lives are not harmed and called on Hamas and the Palestinian Authority to clearly and unequivocally renounce terror. The Arab American Institute, a private group that represents Americans of Arab descent, condemned Israel's offensive and called on the administration to demand that Israel halt the destruction of Palestinian installations and allow diplomacy to resolve the issue.
Israeli troops rounded up dozens of ministers and lawmakers from the Palestinians' ruling Hamas party yesterday, while forging ahead with a military campaign in Gaza meant to win the release of an Israeli soldier held by Hamas gunmen. And the body of a kidnapped 18-year-old Jewish settler who was shot in the head was found in the West Bank. Palestinian militants said they killed Eliyahu Asheri, whose body was found buried near the West Bank city of Ramallah. Israeli aircraft targeted a car carrying Palestinian militants in Gaza City. The Israeli military said that a missile missed the vehicle, and Mahdi Dahoui, an Islamic Jihad activist, escaped from the car. Another unidentified person was wounded.
And Israeli troops also have arrested Hamas labor minister Mohammed al-Barghouti in Ramallah, according to CNN. Palestinian security officials said Israeli Defense Forces troops arrested a cabinet member of the Hamas-led Palestinian Authority early today as Israel increased pressure on the militant group to free a captive soldier. The officials said labor minister Mohammed Barghouti was stopped on his way to his village north of Ramallah. Military jeep stopped his car, ordered him out of the vehicle, and then took him away.
Israel said its warplanes buzzed the summer residence of President Bashar Assad of Syria in a bold warning to the country that shelters the political leaders of Hamas. State-run Syrian television said two Israeli planes flew near Syria's Mediterranean coast and national air defenses opened fire in the direction of the planes, and they dispersed. Assad's summer residence is in the western city of Latakia on the Mediterranean shore. The Syrian report did not mention the Israeli claim that the fighter jets buzzed Assad's residence. Israeli television reported that four planes were involved in a low-altitude flight and that Assad was in the residence at the time. Israeli military officials said Assad was targeted because of the direct link between Syria and Hamas, which now controls the Palestinian government. Israeli Justice Minister Haim Ramon said the hardline marshal, who appears to be increasingly at odds with more moderate Hamas politicians in Gaza, is in Israel's sights for assassination.
And more than a dozen European governments yesterday came under severe pressure to own up to their secret services' role in handing over suspected terrorists to U.S. intelligence after Franco Frattini, the EU Justice Commissioner, admitted for the first time that European territory had been used for extraordinary renditions. This according to The Guardian. As the Council of Europe, Europe's leading human rights watchdog, voted to continue its inquiry into CIA secret flights, Terry Davis, the Secretary General, proposed laws to control national security services and revised safeguards on the use of civil and military aircraft. Frattini's intervention came as parliamentarians voted overwhelmingly to approve a report by liberal Swiss Senator Dick Marty that named and shamed 14 European states, including Britain, Germany, and Sweden, and watched a video containing direct testimony on secret detention and torture from two survivors. Urging national governments to investigate alleged CIA activities on their territories, Frattini said, "It's extremely premature to draw consequences from the elements so far available. What we must do is make sure that national authorities understand that they not only have the power but the duty to carry out judicial investigations."
In Iraq, the head of the British Army Special Investigations Branch was found hanging by a bootlace in his barracks room. According to the inquest, Captain Kenneth Masters, who commanded 61 section of the Royal Military Police's Special Investigation Branch, had become stressed and frustrated. He had been involved in investigations into allegations of abusive treatment of Iraqi detainees by British soldiers. Warrant Officer Philip Floyd told the court he was very conscientious. He had a sense of frustration in that the procedures we had to conduct and the inquiries were hindered by forces outside of our control. He did not explain what he meant by that, unquote. Floyd did not explain what he meant by that phrase, but the Royal Military Police had to investigate every incident where British troops had opened fire and civilians had been wounded or killed. Captain Masters seemed to think he had disappointed others, the warrant officer said. When a soldier was found drunk on duty, he took personal charge of the inquiry. Warrant Officer Floyd said he took it very personally and worried that it would lead to disciplinary action. He became more and more indecisive, but I never picked up anything from members of the section that was disparaging.
And the Russian President Vladimir Putin has ordered special services to find and destroy the killers of four Russian diplomats taken hostage in Iraq, according to the BBC. The head of Russia's security services immediately pledged to see Putin's order carried out. The Russian government confirmed the four men's death this week after an insurgent group released a video showing two of them being killed. The group had demanded Russia leave Chechnya and release Muslim prisoners. Putin said Russia hoped its friends would help to identify the killers. The head of the Federal Security Service, Nikolai Patrushev, promised to carry out the task, however much time and effort it requires. Patrushev's statement said, "The whole responsibility for the situation in Iraq, including guaranteeing the security of its citizens and also foreign specialists, as before, lies on the occupying powers." Russia has strongly opposed the U.S.-led military campaign from the beginning.
UNESCO says a tsunami warning system covering the Indian Ocean region is now up and running. The UN organization, which has overseen the project, says the whole region can now receive and distribute warnings of possible tsunamis. The system is in place 18 months after the devastating tsunami of December 2004 that killed more than 200,000 people. The Pacific region has had a system for 40 years, and others are planned for the Atlantic, Mediterranean, and Caribbean. This from the BBC.
And the G10 group of food importing countries said today it was out of the question to base any global farm trade deal on a proposal by developing nations to cut agricultural import duties by an average of 54%. Ministers from around a third of the World Trade Organization memberships have convened in Geneva this week to search for a breakthrough in deadlocked negotiations to reduce tariffs and subsidies on farm goods. WTO Chief Pascal Lamy said he hoped to find agreement between countries based on a plan by the G20 group of developing countries led by Brazil and India. The Doha Development Agenda, a round of talks, was launched in 2001 with the aim of lifting millions out of poverty and boosting the world economy. Poor nations have long insisted that an agreement must be struck first in agriculture for their prime exports before they will offer concessions to Western countries in opening their industrial and service markets, this according to Reuters.
BP is facing legal action in the U.S. over charges that it tried to manipulate propane prices in 2004. Regulators allege its BP Products North America subsidy artificially forced up prices by buying huge propane stocks only to withhold them from the market. BP has denied the civil charges and says it intends to defend itself. On Wednesday, a former BP trader, Dennis Abbott, pleaded guilty to manipulating the propane market. The charges against BP come as U.S. consumers face increased petrol and heating oil costs caused by a surge in global commodity prices. The Commodity Futures Trading Commission, which regulates the market, said the propane had been needed to fuel homes in rural areas. Particularly in the northeastern and midwestern regions of the U.S., propane is by far the main source of domestic heating and constitutes a growing slice of household budgets. This from the BBC as well.
And Spain officially announced the start of peace negotiations with the Basque separatist group, ETA, after formally informing Parliament today. And the Prime Minister warned that talks to end decades of bloodshed would be long and difficult. The talks have been widely expected since ETA declared a permanent ceasefire on March 22nd. Prime Minister José Luis Rodríguez Zapatero had pledged to formally inform Congress by the end of June when it breaks for a long summer holiday. Zapatero has stressed that the talks would be held with discretion, and he kept his word, giving no details of where or when the negotiations would be held. He said only that the Interior Minister would update congressional leaders on the progress in September.
Mexico's presidential candidates have made their last bid for votes ahead of hotly contested July 2nd polls. Candidates addressed crowds in their electoral strongholds before a ban on campaigning gives voters time to reflect to effect on Thursday. Leftist Andrés Manuel López Obrador and conservative Felipe Calderón are seen as front-runners in a very tight race. The campaigns have been marked by bitterly traded political insults and accompanied by a rise in drug violence. López Obrador, a former mayor of Mexico City, addressed tens of thousands of supporters at a rally in the capital central square, the Zocalo. He said Sunday's election will demonstrate that money doesn't always win out over the morality and dignity of the people. He also tried to allay fears that the economy would suffer under his leadership. Whoever wins faces the challenge of generating growth and creating jobs, moves that would help stem the flow of migrants to the U.S. Tackling drug traffic and brutal violence surrounding it is another issue that new president will have to face. This has been the KBOO Morning News for Thursday, June 29, 2006. Thanks for listening. Today's editor is Chris Andre. Our engineer is Steve. KBOO volunteers edited and produced some of the taped stories you heard. Kathleen Stevenson is the KBOO AM News and Public Affairs Director. I'm Chris Andre.
And I'm Brian Smith.
We clear the air at 90.7 FM in Portland, 91.9 in the Columbia River Gorge on translator K264AA, and 100.7 in the Willamette Valley on translator K220HR. If you'd like to volunteer in the AM newsroom, call Kathleen Stevenson at 503-231-8032, extension 202, or email us at amnews@kboo.org.